Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Self-Control Through Torah. I'm David Gottlieb, a historian of Judaism and an adjunct member of the faculty in Jewish Studies at the Spertus Institute for Jewish Learning and Leadership in Chicago.
And I'm Modia Silver, a psychotherapist and author in Toronto.
For those of you who may be joining us for the first time or haven't checked in for a while, just a brief review of what we do or are trying to do in this podcast. My longtime Chevruta Modia Silver and I have chosen as our Sisyphean task of pushing this boulder up the hill of Torah interpretation, what we've chosen to do in this podcast is go through all of the parshiot in the Torah to see what lessons in character development and self-control we can find in the Torah portions using as our guide Rabbi Menachem Mendel Lefen's Cheshbon HaNefesh, the pioneering guide to Musar, ethical self-improvement. We stay on one midah or character trait for 4 weeks as we go through successive Torah portions. Then we go on to the next midah in Rabbi Lefen's text. This week is our third week on the midah of tzedek, or righteousness, about which Rabbi Lefen has comparatively little to say, which is too bad, even though his text is very rich and full of meaning and content, because now we find ourselves in the most interesting and puzzling and in some ways alien parshiot of Vayikra, the book of Leviticus. This week, we're looking at righteousness through the lens of Parshiat Tazria. Most years, this would be a double Torah portion with Matzora, but this year is a leap year. So there's an extra month, and so these double parshiot are, this double parsha anyway, is separated, and Tazria and Matzora are going to be considered separately. This Tazria is the portion that you always feel bad about when a kid has it at their bar or bat mitzvah. Some poor pimpled kid in the midst of having all kinds of skin eruptions has to get up on the bima and chant about skin eruptions. And a child on the verge of adolescence being asked to chant this as a holy text. I mean, I've seen it done, and it can be done beautifully, and kids have intelligent things to say about it. But we today, you blessed readers, and Moji and I have to grapple with what lessons can be gained from Parshat Tazria about the Midah of Tzedek, or righteousness. Moji, what do you think?
Well, I think you have positioned it nicely as a Herculean challenge for us, because David and I, as David said, we've been chevrutas for a long, long time. I think just shy of 20 years, probably 18 years, something like that.
Unbelievable.
We met through the Musar Institute. So for many, many years, we were learning together Musar texts, the traditional texts. And then more recently, we studied a Hasidic text, the Tanya. And interestingly, and this you'll see why I'm saying this, the Tanya is all about the Beinoni, the person who's in between, but in between the Rasha, the one who is so physically oriented to the physical ego world, and the Tzaddik, who has Tzedek, who is the righteous. And you and I, as we learned this, came to understand that probably, 95 to 98% of the world are in between us, and less than maybe 1 to 5% are either Rasha, like very physically oriented, or Tzaddikim, or righteous. So as we try and study this trait of Tzedek, we're actually being challenged to rise to a level that is, hypersonic. It's like just, I don't know. We've struggled already for 2 weeks about how we get there. So I like what you just said about the bar and bat mitzvah, because not only is it about the pimples, but this parsha is also about the impurity after childbirth.
That's right.
I'm sure also makes bar and bat mitzvahs pretty uncomfortable.
Right, right. It's interesting that you mentioned that. I want to respond to that particular comment and then broaden it to a wider observation. The biblical scholar Jacob Milgram talks about the pregnant woman having to offer a chatat, a sin offering. And he thinks, and he's convincingly shown, that chatat is not a sin offering. It actually comes not from chet, from sin, but from chita, which means to cleanse or expurgate or decontaminate. In other words, he says a korban chatat is not saying that the woman has sinned. It's an offering of purgation. Now, why would a woman have to decontaminate or expurgate after giving birth? The reason is that these parshiot are really concerned with leaking the fluids that are essential to life. Seminal emissions, menstrual periods, the blood that's shed at childbirth, these things are concerning to the rabbis because it is a leaking of the essence of life. And the whole concept of tumah, of things that are impure, is about keeping clear the border between death and life. There's a great deal of anxiety around this in the Torah, and so there are boundaries about what one may do and not do, how to treat certain eruptions of the skin, because there's a very strong desire to keep clear the border between death and life. And I think Jacob Milgram's description of this should change the whole view of how we see women bringing a specific kind of offering after having given birth. Similarly, it says if you've given birth to a son, you're only impure for a week. But if you've given birth to a daughter, you're impure for 2 weeks and you have to stay outside the camp. This was typically seen, especially in feminist commentaries, as a denigration of the feminine, of saying this is more impure than the male. First of all, impurity is not purely good or bad. There are different categories. Some things, for example, we know it's not good or bad because touching the scroll of the Torah makes the hands impure. There's nothing holier than the Torah. So it's clearly not a good or bad distinction. It's a distinction of the power of certain items, fluids, categories of life and death. So we know it's not purely a good or bad thing. The concern is about, again, to me, the border between life and death. This parsha is really about life-affirming activities and creating an entire society that can be just and righteous in the following way, since we're talking about righteousness. Keep clear and communally guarded the border between life and death. What do you think?
I think that's beautiful, because the act of bringing this offering then, if it's a statement of I understand or I strive to understand the border between life and death, then it ties into tzedek. It ties into the midah of righteousness, because one of the roots of tzedek is zaka, which means clear or pure.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a hint. So maybe what you're saying, maybe what we pull out of this parsha is that when you do something, when you recognize that it's not just about, oh, I'm just moving through life and I give birth and then I go get a job and then I come home and cook dinner, but I actually go through a connective ritual with my community. I stand at the entrance to the tent of meeting and hand over my offering to the priest so that I stay connected to community, that is my statement of my desire for purity, to be tzedek.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's beautiful. And I think when we take what you've said and what I've said, and we look back at the Torah portion, we see a lot of concern about, problems in the skin and the hair, the physical envelope of the person. And we have to remember that in terms of purity, it was the job of the Kohen to maintain purity in the individual, and through the individual in the community. Let's not forget that the Kohen, and I'm getting this, I'm not, you know, meaning to plagiarize. This is, I draw this from the commentary in the JPS Tanakh. The Kohen was the religious and the medical authority of the Israelites. Now, the Kohen was not responsible for treating disease, but for diagnosing it. And physical disease was seen as a manifestation of spiritual illness. So if you had an eruption of some kind in your skin, it was indicative of some kind of imbalance in your midot, basically. And you had to bring an offering as a way of physically embodying the effort to get those things back in order. Similarly, there's a lot about the relationship between leprosy and gossip, right? Zara'at and Motzi Shemra share a root. So, and Rabbi Israel Salanter, really the modern founder of Musar, said, this is because the Torah is teaching you that you have to be as scrupulous about what comes out of your mouth as what goes in. We, in other words, are a living boundary between the sacred and the profane. And because of that, we have to be incredibly scrupulous about maintaining a cosmic balance. The Kohen is in charge of that process, but we have to live it.
And in living it, maybe I'm oversimplifying or twisting what you've just said, but if we're corrupt, if the external presentation of what's on our skin is actually a reflection of damaged midot or a damaged internal spiritual mechanism, then that, to me, that speaks to truth. And so again, like, I've been looking at the roots of the word tzedek to try and come to terms with how we map that to this parsha. And in Aramaic, there's the word tzedek, which in Arabic is tzedak, which means he told the truth. So justice, tzedek, is truth. So the opposite of that would be corrupted midot, that I've messed up my internal spiritual mechanism.
Yes.
And now it's being reflected externally. And in the parsha, we see it, it's literally on the skin. But today, as I walk down the street, you know, as I live my life in Toronto in 20, whatever year we're in, whatever.
5784.
Thank you, 5784. I also have to know that, as you say, my speech, maybe it's more my speech now than an outbreak on my skin that is going to betray my lack of truth or my lack of purity in my midot.
Right. Medical science today would suggest that this whole means of diagnosis and addressing of problems is off base, because we know more from a medically scientific perspective now than they did then. And it's clear, at least in a lot of cases, that what's going on in your skin doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in your heart and mind. But the challenge does not.
Wait a second. Okay, I want to push back on that a bit then.
You're saying that a kid with acne is, you can know that he or she is mentally disturbed?
No, I'm not saying a kid with acne, but I'm saying as a somatic therapist, a somatic experiencing practitioner, I have clients come to me all the time who have physical blocks or resistances or manifestations of something. I've had a woman come with her hand bent and not able to move it. And I won't go into other
examples. No, I'm sure you can provide anecdotal evidence of people who have psychological problems that are manifesting themselves physically. I'm not saying that they don't. I'm saying something different. I want to be sure I'm making myself clear. What I'm saying is, you cannot look at a person's skin and know what is going on in their heart and mind. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you say that.
and medical science will back me up. And the challenge with these kind of parshiot, as indeed with all of Torah, is applying an ancient epistemology to current circumstances. This wouldn't be a canonical book if it didn't have, or wasn't seen to have, abiding truths that can apply in all places and times. But that doesn't mean, Moja, yes, I'm going to push back on you now. That doesn't mean that we have to think in every instance that what it is saying is literally true.
That I agree with, not in every instance, but this could be the first time we're actually disagreeing with each other and not coming
after
to
18 years. I've always wondered why your skin is so good. It must be because you're a because you're a Lamed Vavnik.
Uh-huh. Okay. Not in every case, but the skin or the body does tell so much. Look, I blush. I could actually feel heat in my cheeks like 20 seconds ago. And mm-hmm. so I imagine that the color underneath my eyes changed on my skin and went a little more red. That's an indication of what was going on in my heart in that moment. So I think, yes, you can't look at a kid with acne and go, oh, that person has mental health challenges. But I think the external presentation of what's on the skin can actually reveal some things that are happening in the heart.
Okay. I don't want to go too far down this road of argument. Yeah. I think where we're agreeing is by saying that one of the great innovations of Torah, which is evident in this parsha, is that there is a great sensitivity between physical, a great sensitivity about the relationship between physical imbalances in the individual and communal imbalances writ large, and that the relationship between God and humanity, as outlined in the Torah, suggests that we're still learning thousands of years later from treatments of hair and skin diseases that we would no longer abide by. We are learning that that the individual's problems affect the community, and that the community can bring ideas about how to address those problems to the individual under the aegis of God, who cares about these things. That is a radical idea.
Okay, and that's perfect. And that's a nice segue into, so let me pick up on something different then, about the sensitivity of community, of individual in community and community for the individual. It says in the Parsha that if you find a little bit of white tsa'arat, it makes the person tameh, it makes them impure.
Mm-hmm.
But if their whole entire body turns white, then they are actually tahor, they're pure. That seems strange, right? A little bit makes you impure, but your entire body, if it's covered in white, makes you pure. So
what do you make of that?
Well, it's not what I make of it. It's going to be what Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch makes of it. He says that if the tsa'arat, if this this thing, whatever we're calling tsa'arat, spreads all over a person during their quarantine time, that's a sign that being in isolation made them lose all their moral feelings. So if you call that person tameh now, impure, it's not going to motivate them to improve their behavior. So instead, as an act of tzedek, as an act of righteous, charitable righteousness, you actually go to them and say, hey, you're tahor. And so I was thinking, maybe it's a bad example, but, you know, a little baby is now standing and walking for the first time, and then they fall down. And you don't want to turn around to them and go, you idiot, why don't you just get back up and do it again?
Why not? That's what I do.
You want to encourage them. And so if I'm already exiled from my community and my entire body now is white, I want to be encouraged to come back. I want to be told that even though I have this problem, I'm still welcome and the doors are open and they look forward to me returning. I think that's what Samson Raphael Hirsch is suggesting in terms of tzedek, that it's the community's responsibility to be righteous.
Agreed. 100% agree. And everything that we're talking about, and everything I believe that these parshiot are talking about here in Vayikra are about, and I'm quoting Rabbi Shai Held here, creating an ordered haven within an often frighteningly chaotic world. Let's not forget that this is depicting a people in a desert, in the midst of constituting a sacred community, in the midst of constituting a radically new way of looking at the world, which is divine kingship, no earthly ruler that claims to be a god or claims to have a unique and exclusive channel to God, but a community dedicated to God and getting its legislation from God. And the question in communities, in this community, is, like with any community, people are suffering. And I think this goes to what the comment you were just making about the person who becomes covered with white and is no longer tameh, but is tahor. People are suffering with diseases and they're being ostracized and excluded. This details how to bring such people back into the community and to balance individual and communal needs. So the questions that this parsha made me consider is, when should we separate from communal life? What are we going through when we feel we should be separated? And to whom should we turn to help restore us? This is actually something that one of my other favorite commentators, Rabbi Shefa Gold, talks about. When there's a dissonance between the inner and the outer, it has to be addressed. And I want to give a personal example. Two and a half years ago now, I was assaulted and badly beaten. And you could tell by looking at my face that something bad had happened. And I could not go out in public. I simply could not. Not only because of how I looked, but because there was such shame and anger associated with the attack itself that I felt I had to exclude myself. I had to step outside the camp. In other words, I have a visceral feeling of an analogous experience to having a skin eruption, right? I had two black eyes, a torn eyelid, shattered cheekbones, you know, and contusions all over my body. The result was I just simply didn't want to be in the kahal. I couldn't bring myself to be in the kahal for many, many reasons. But the community reached out to me and in that way brought me back in. And I think there's an analogous process going on here. There's tremendous care and concern for people. And the person who in chapter 13:45, as for the person with a leprous affection, his clothes shall be rent, his head shall be left bare, and he shall cover his upper lip, and he shall call out, impure, impure. And this is a beautiful thing. It's not only warning people that this person has contagion, but it's suggesting that, the person has some outward signs of mourning, right? The covering of the lip, the torn clothes. It's very similar to mourning because the person is isolated and bereft. And this is the first step toward being brought back into the camp.
Mm. I think what you talk about is really interesting because there's the relationship between the camp and you and the individual. There's you versus your community that welcomed you back in. But then there was you that felt, I guess, unsupported, or you didn't have enough support to go out into the community. Is that fair to say?
No, it wasn't the community's fault. It was I needed to be away from people. I was scared to be around people.
Right. Sorry, what I mean is that you didn't have enough, whether it's internal supports or external supports. Like, for us to do anything in the world, we need to feel supported. And so there was a lack, not that the community was lacking giving you support, but that internally you didn't feel like there was enough to allow you to go out. You needed to protect yourself.
In some ways, you're correct, but I would still phrase it slightly differently. Simply, it wasn't a matter of not support. It was a physical need and a spiritual need to be alone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that adds to the challenge of communal living is how do we keep balancing the individual needs and the communal needs? There's another interesting letter. It's a large letter. I remember the first word in Vayikra. Has a small aleph. Here in this week's parsha, we have a big gimel. So in chapter 13, verse 33, it says, "Vehitgala, and he shall be shaven. Vehitgala ve'et hanetek." So the gimel is large.
Yeah.
And there's a teaching here, just one sec, by the author of Meshech Chochma wants to talk about this. And so he says that there are some people, so the obligation here is that every single person has to be shaven. If you're in this state, then your head has to be shaven. And he says, but what about the Nazir or the Nazira? The female Nazir. What about if you're a man with a beard, you're not supposed to shave it with a razor? We learn in chapter 19 of Leviticus. If you're a Kohen, you're warned against shaving your beard with a razor in chapter 21 of Leviticus. But here, the Gimel is large to make it really clear that we don't care if you're a man with a beard, if you're a Nazira or a Nazir or a Kohen, but figuring out whether this Sa'arat is more important than any of those other things, we're going to pull out the razor and scissors and cut your hair off. Because in this case, the community is more important than the individual, like protection of the community.
And so to say again what the Gimel, the large Gimel, is referring to?
Yeah, like why the Gimel? Like why not the Taf or the Lamed or that? I don't know.
Huh. Because it's so interesting when these large letters appear that it's, does it start as a mistranscription? Is it deliberately done and it's telling us something? In most instances, there's really interesting speculation about why that would be. But I think the large Gimel here that you're talking about brings up something that's unique about Torah that we can especially see in Parshiot that are sometimes a little bit challenging, like this one. And that is that there's levels of meaning to it. And the Torah, as a canonical book, causes us to constantly confront that we are B'Tselem Elohim, that we live at the boundary of the animal and the divine, and that we have, and that living with this tension for thousands of years now has created a unique epistemology in us, has changed the Jewish brain. There's a really interesting book called The Rabbi's Brain: Mystics, Moderns, and the Science of Jewish Thinking by two MDs, one of whom is a doctor, Andrew Newberg, MD, and Rabbi David Halpern, MD. And it says about this tension between the human and the divine. In fact, the dialectical tension of living a finite life for an infinite creator creates a lack of peace of mind and a constant striving toward creating a somewhat antinomian truth that can never be fully realized. Moja, yes. What I think this is saying regarding us this week is that we have to constantly strive to approach complete righteousness, knowing that we will never get there. That doing this changes the way our brains work and affects our very souls. And mm-hmm. that this is all part of the radically new idea of a people living directly under the leadership of God with no human intermediary. That doesn't happen until later, and God gives it sanction. But it's saying you can't read this just like any other book. And that's what large letters like the Gimel are telling you.
Nice. I think that's good. I like that. I actually find that inspiring, just like Lo Alecha Hamlecha Ligmor, that it's not our job to complete it, but mm-hmm. neither are we absolved from responsibility to try to keep moving
right.
forward.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's interesting. Maybe we're coming to a close here with our podcast this week, but you know, Vayikra, you keep saying, and I keep agreeing that Vayikra is a really tough book to get through. But I'm finding it quite energizing as we do this week by week by overlaying Amida on top of the Parsha.
Yeah, it once again proves the proposition that we pursued when we started this, which is you can choose any Midah and any Torah portion and you will find a lesson for living.
Right, beautiful. So I guess, I don't know what the homework is, but it's something around clarity and purity. Maybe it's in what way do you sully yourself? what way do you what is it? Maybe it's in what way? Like if skin, if this is all about skin, the second part of the Pasha is all about skin, then that's the presentation of ourselves to the world. It's mostly our skin. And so in what ways do we present ourselves to the world lacking truth or in an impure or unclear way?
Yeah, yeah. And to bring that down to a sort of somatic therapy level, like I want to think this week about my body and what it's telling me about the imbalances in my spirit.
Okay, and I want to think about my language, my speech, because before you were talking about the connection to Lashon Hara. And I actually just had a panic phone call from a client yesterday because that client said things that were really, really hurtful to their partner. And now their relationship hangs in the balance. And so I'd like to spend this week thinking about the connection between Tzedek and Lashon Hara.
Okay. All right, good. I like this because we have separate homework. Like
yes.
Related, yeah. But separate assignments. So we have to remember to make time to talk about that next week when we do Parshat Metzora and get to talk about more diseases, which is, but at a deeper level too, and diseases right. In like buildings and stuff too.
Right. And next week also, because we'll have a special guest,
yes.
I think that we will, I'm guessing based on who it is, that we will slant a lot of our talk to Tzedek being connected to tzedakah, to charity.
Ah, so who is that guest?
It's Avram Rosenzweig. So Avram Rosenzweig started a charity in Toronto called Via Havta, and it is the Jewish response to homelessness. So we have vans in the city that drive around the city every single day, delivering food, blankets, clothes, medications, everything to people who experience homelessness. And it was started by Avram, who's going to join us next week.
Amazing. As a person who spent 20 years doing affordable housing development, I really look forward to that conversation and our special guests.
Beautiful.
So thank you to our faithful listeners for joining us for another episode of Self-Control Through Torah. We have been discussing Parshat Tatzriah in the book of Leviticus. Next week, we'll be discussing Metzorah with our special guest. We are so grateful to you for joining us on this journey through the Torah using Rabbi Menachem Mendel Lefin's Cheshbon HaNefesh as a guide to ethical self-improvement. I'm David Gottlieb.
And I'm Modia Silva. See you next week.
Bye-bye.